a WNST, Tassel Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. I am very, very thankful for Thanksgiving this year. So thankful that I'm actually skipping the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week, brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at Window Nation, of course, Goodwill. But I am serving some folks with Goodwill on Wednesday. If you you want to pitch in downtown in the morning, we're meeting about 10 o'clock on Wednesday. Ness at BaltimorePositive.com, feeding a lot of less fortunate folks for the holiday. But I tell you what, Thanksgiving has gotten like the old silver-haired bird in me active, and I'm looking through names and people that I haven't seen recently, people I want to have on the show and visit with. And as Don Mohler would tell anybody, I don't green room anybody. So I think the last time I saw John Buren, my wife was battling cancer. She was getting a little bit better. I usually run into John back on the back stretch and back in the horses during Preakness week at some point. John, I think it must have been 5-6 years ago, but it's been a number of years, so much so that I don't even know that you've in semi-retirement from your real estate, the one, the only from WJZ many, many years, and a man who at one point tried to give me a career as So You Want to Be a Sports Guy back in 1988. We welcome John Buren back onto the program. Man, it's been a while. What's up, John? How you been, brother?
It was the year that I'll Have Another won the Preakness, so that was a while ago. That was, I mean, I could look it up, but that
wow.
was.
Wow. That's I'll the last time you were at the Preakness?
That was when I ran into you.
Okay. All right. Well, then you have a better memory for this than I, but how are you people? What's going on with John Van Buren? What are you doing these days?
Down at John Van Buren, hon.
Is he bowling? Is he out bowling?
Yeah. Life is good, man. I have zero complaints. Everything. I've said to people before, I hope that reincarnation is not a thing. Because I couldn't hit it this good a second time. I mean, life has been very, very good to me, Nestor.
Well, you've been out of the public eye and out of the media eye. I guess I reached you and you had heard about my Ravens pass and all that. Are you watching sports? I mean, I guess I'm wondering at this point. I dedicated my entire life when you knew me as a young man to the Baltimore Orioles. They've treated me like manure. I have in front of the whole world for 26 years, beat on my chest about my love of the city, my love of the football team, all of that. I don't know how much sports I'll wind up watching. I watch far less than I used to because I don't feel valued, right? But more than that, I'm wondering what the value is in great sports writing or great sports reporting or inside sports reporting. I don't even know what the value of that is anymore. But just from a kicked out of it, been a long time. You love tennis. Do you watch tennis?
Yeah, I do. The team sports, I don't do much. Football bores me to death anymore, especially the NFL, because those commercial breaks go on for a month and a half. So football, baseball, I watch very little of. I still love baseball, but it's turned into home run derby. And you know, there's not a whole lot of what I grew up calling baseball being played out there. NBA is just a three-point shooting contest. I got no interest there. I will watch college basketball. During the pandemic, I was the Big Ten commissioner, baby. I watched every freaking game. It was a great year for the Big Ten. And I couldn't go anywhere. You know, you couldn't do anything. So I just locked down and watched all these Big Ten games. I still like college basketball. I will watch the tennis and I'll watch golf because I wasted 19 years of my life on that game once upon a time. And I watch thoroughbred horse racing off and on, you know, around the big events. And sometimes my family's in the business, so sometimes I'll watch a race that they might be involved in and all that jazz. But that's it. It's liberating, Ness. Let me just tell you something. When you get up in the morning, you don't have to look at box scores. It's liberating.
Oh, I feel that way at Baltimore Positive. I had Adam Kolarik on last week. I had him for the Crab Cake Tour. And I literally, when he sat down, I said, dude, I haven't Googled you. I haven't Wikied you. I don't know enough about you. I probably should have studied more. But I don't really want to talk about your baseball stats. You know, I'm interested in you as the kid from Catonsville that won a World Series. I'm interested in who you are, not who you got out in the eighth inning in a tight situation. Like,
right.
And I don't want to know you that way. You know what I mean? So as a 54-year-old talking to a 34-year-old young man who's been in the big leagues, and who did it kind of a different way and grew up in Catonsville. I don't want to judge people by the back of their bubblegum card anymore, you know?
Right. Right, yeah, that becomes sort of irrelevant after a while because you've seen them all come and go. But when you said you were querying, what is the value of someone who actually does some level of reporting in the arena of sports anymore? I would say the value has been elevated because the supply has diminished. Everybody's a, like you and I were texting the other day. Everybody's a cheerleader anymore, and I saw that start when I was still in the biz. Now, keep in mind, Ness, time flies when you're high on crack. I've been out of the biz for 20 years.
What?
Yeah,
You got
I've
out of the
been.
business before I got married? Like, oh, two? Really?
I rolled out in April of 02.
Wow. I
That's why
didn't.
I said time
You feel
flies.
very. I mean, John, I love you, man. And it's not like you feel relevant like I saw you on TV last week, but you don't feel gone 20 years. You know, it
No,
doesn't feel
that
like it's been that long.
no, yeah, there in ways it seems like that for me because if I had to go in there and do a show right now, I'd be flipping lost. I mean, the business has changed so much. I know enough to know I wouldn't know what to do.
How
But
many years were
anyway,
you on a TV set with a thing? 30? 35? How many years did
30,
you
30,
did 30?
30
Okay.
total. I did 17, 16 and a half in Baltimore. And you know, you're talking about the value of sports reporting. I saw that start to change while I was still in it. My first hint was before I came to Baltimore. I was in San Francisco, and 49ers were really good. They had the whole Montana crowd, and they won Super Bowl 19. They beat the Dolphins with Marino out at Stanford Stadium, and they only
You came
lost
here in
one.
82, right? 82?
No, 86,
80.
January of
Oh, what,
86.
later. Okay, I thought you were here earlier. Okay.
No, I was here for that Super Bowl in 85. So I saw this juggernaut, which the 49ers were just becoming, and it was clear they were going to be. And oh my God, everything was asked permission. Bill Walsh was the first NFL coach I ever saw who did a weekly news conference like he was at the Pentagon or something. Before that, you know, you go out, you go, hey coach, can I grab you after practice? Hey coach, can I get you before practice? There was none of this news conference crap. But Walsh, they started it. And all of a sudden, you're not going to have access to the locker room. We're going to have an interview room and all that. So I saw it get started. And then when I came here, I saw it with the Orioles when they got good, like 97, 98.
I was there
Oh,
the night that Albert Bell mistreated you, and like
my
I
God.
just thought like that was your moment, probably the same moment that Chad Steele looked at me and said, "You're not a real reporter after
Really?
31 years." I thought to myself, you know, there used to be some decorum here, but when I saw the Orioles shit upon John Buehren in his prime and Channel 13, I thought to myself, what chance do the rest of us have? Like, what
Well,
chance do we have if he's going to do that on a live microphone on a live broadcast in 1997, 8, 9, whenever that was? I thought to myself, oh my God, they've lost their minds. It's one thing to treat little Nestor that way. You don't treat the guys on TV that way.
I have rarely looked into the eyes of pure insanity. Rarely. I looked into Albert Bell's eyes that day. And there was a lunatic behind them. I'm telling you, if I'd run into that guy and he'd locked eyes with me on the street, I would have gotten the hell out of Dodge. That guy was way messed up, way messed up. Now, what did Chance, did you have a bad thing with Chance Steele? What the hell happened there?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't spoken a word to him in 20 years since he told me I should be more like Mike Preston. You know,
Did
which
you ever
I.
have a good, did you ever have a good relationship with him?
No, I mean, but never bad. Never, never. I've never had words with Chad Steele that I'm aware of that,
Okay,
and certainly not brought on by me,
so
but.
you're on the purple train from before day one, and then when did this thing hit a crossroads? What happened? Where they said, don't come around here no more.
Well, I mean, I wrote about this at length, right? So, like, I would say sometime after the second Super Bowl, it became very apparent to me, like, doing the radio shows and the barn shows and how much money the players wanted and their reliability or lack thereof. And then Flacco left, right? And Kevin Byrne was 3 years on his way out. Kevin Byrne had Pontius piloted all of this for years, right? Like literally how players were, where I would go to Kevin and say, is there any expectation that the guy who gives up the game-winning touchdown is going to speak to the fans and the media? Or is that just over with now? Should we not even expect anybody that had a bad game, should we not expect them at their locker unless they had two sacks or two interceptions, right? Mm-hmm. We have Marlon Humphrey, who years ago, before the plague, doesn't show up to accept his team MVP award.
Really?
From my employee. Just says to Chad, I'm not going out there to accept the team MVP award at the end of the year from the media. And I said, you know, and this is Luke. So this is 4 or 5 years ago. I would say this. This is some unprinted stuff. Like anybody wants to read about it, you can read about it. I wrote 90,000 words. I would say the Wembley knee in conjunction with the Ravens being bad, in conjunction with drafting a black quarterback, in conjunction with a half-empty upper deck, in conjunction with Donald Trump and SOBs and knees, and then the plague, right? So, like, oh, and throw Earl Thomas in there, too. He's a little bit of a part of this as well.
Who is he?
He was the safety that they signed from the Seahawks that was chasing his wife around with a gun, and they had to cut him, and they gave him $55 million. Right. So, during that period of time, I went to Kevin Byrne several times, especially after the Wembley knee, when my section emptied out, right? Like, I'm up in section 513, and I turned around, and I saw something that quite frankly, I had never seen. I think you can see me on the screen, right? I'll share this picture with you, because I have it. Let me just find it. I'm going to share it with the audience and share it with you, because it's a picture my wife and I took the night that Joe Flacco got hit in the head by Kiko Alonso. And I take this because if I were to write a book about the moment my fandom changed and everything changed, this was about 3 weeks after the Wembley knee, John. You can see thousands of empty seats in the stadium. And this is my seats. These are the seats I sat in for 26 years in the front row of the upper deck. And
what
I was surrounded.
Is
this is the first quarter. Because we beat Miami 35-0 that night. This was at the beginning of the game. Literally, this is kickoff. There were nothing but Dolphins fans in my section standing behind me, jeering me in my own stadium. And this is 2017, and I'm like, I'm going to go have a meeting with Kevin. So I called Kevin. I said, you guys are having some problems. I'm happy to tell people why they need to come back to the stadium and sit in the middle of this political thing. I was starting Baltimore Positive at that point, and I'm like, you guys are having some problems. Like, people aren't coming to the games. I can't give my tickets away. I had two extra seats in the sixth row that were my PSL original tickets from 1998, and I was eating them week after week after week. I couldn't give tickets away. Now, this is 17 into 18. They drafted Lamar. 19, Trump's running the country. Freddie Gray has happened. We have mayors going to prison. This is before the plague in 20. So in 18 and 19, I was eating tickets.
Wow.
And I said on the air, I'm going to have to give my PSLs up. Kevin Byrne took very, like, you're down in the right. You're talking bad about the Ravens. And I'm like, the hell's wrong with you people? I've been supporting this team for 23 years. I'm losing $3,000 a year in tickets. So this started with me going to them and saying, I met with the marketing guy, Brad Downs. I called Baker Koppelman. I'm seeing empty seats everywhere. And I'm like, that's not good for you. It's not good for me. I'm in the sports business.
But they wanted to just blow right by it. Right?
Yeah, they wanted me to pretend that they wanted me to go on the air and play the role of, you know, team employee and pretend the empty seats don't exist. Pretend that I'm not eating tickets every week and all of my friends are trying to get rid of tickets. And then the plague happened, John, right? So then they lock everybody out. Now I said for 2 years during the plague, I'll probably never talk to a football player again. So the last time I was next to a football player, elbow to elbow, Sam Cook came out and did the show at Greenmount Station on a snowy night. It was 3 days before they lost that game to the Titans the year they were good. And I haven't had a media access of that kind since. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they've lied to me in regard to why I was thrown out. They haven't really given me a reason other than Chad Steele doesn't like you. So there's not, and they're discriminating in that they'll let Luke cover the team. They'd let you, John, if you came back to work for Baltimore Positive and I wrote a little note on Baltimore Positive letter and said, John's going to be filling in for Luke, they would let you in. They won't let me in.
It's just all about you.
Yeah, it's all, yeah, I guess so. So
Wow.
that's what's going on. So you ask, and that's, so doesn't that make you feel like great about your Albert Bell thing was 25 years ago now.
Oh yeah, it was forever ago. And I just got so burned out. I got tired of talking to athletes. As a matter of fact, we would hire, Craig Heist, right? Is he
Sure.
still around?
Yeah, very much so. Yep.
Tell him I said hi if you
I'm
see
not
him.
in the press box anymore. I don't know, but I see him at Costas.
Well, I got to the point where I didn't want to talk to baseball players anymore. I was just done with it. There were a couple nice guys that I got along with, but for the most part, if I'm going to talk to the guy who was relevant the night before or who might be relevant in the days ahead, I'm not going to go through, hey, could you give me a couple of minutes? Can we do this? Can we do that? Screw it. So I started hiring Heist. I was able to control enough budget that I could hire Heist to go down and do locker room after the game. And then I just roll sound in. So when I was going down to the ballpark the last 6, 7 years that I was on TV here, I was just using it as a backdrop. I didn't want to talk to anybody live. This is just a place where I go do the show and the players can go do whatever they want. It's just too much garbage, just too many hoops to jump through and too many butts to kiss. And I was getting to a point in my life that I didn't want to do that.
Did you want to be on TV, or did you want to be a sports guy on TV? Would you have been happier getting paid twice as much and doing the weather or being on the Today? Because all I ever loved was sports, right? You've known me since I was 15 years old, John. I'm 54, right? I mean, I've known you since, I was 17 years old when you got here in 86, right? So you've known me all that time. I met you out at the ballpark and Memorial Stadium, and all I've ever done is love sports. And love my city and love the Orioles and pine for the Colts and to get there. Like, to me, as an evolved individual at this point, I love business. I love politics. I like people. I like education. I like learning things. I like asking people. I like being a host. I like asking questions and learning from people way smarter than me. The sports thing for me was my passion, and then it became very early on, I mean, in the 90s, when you're getting pushed around by Albert Bell, don't think he was treating me any better, that it became sort of a wow, this is not nearly as much fun as it should be, as it should be.
Yeah, I got there. I followed very much the same arc. I was all into sports as a child. Played ball, loved it. Followed it passionately. I've always said if ESPN had been around when I was a kid, I would have never graduated from anything. I mean, I would have been locked and loaded all day long watching those ball games. So yeah, and then I got into television. I got into sports actually. I got into television in 74. I went to sports in 77, 77.
So you did
And
news though before that?
I actually got started doing game shows.
Really?
Hell yeah. Locally produced game shows in Roanoke, Virginia.
Wink, Wink Buren.
And then I did some news, and then I did a morning show in Norfolk, and then I got into sports in 77. And I guess, okay, so I bounced around some small markets. I didn't get disillusioned there, but it wasn't long after I got to a big town. Like I went from Evansville, Indiana to Washington, D.C. I'm the answer to a trivia question in Washington. Who was George Michael's predecessor at Channel 4? You're looking at him.
Let's go to the videotape.
It wasn't long after I got to DC that the shiny new wore off of this whole sports thing. And it was just business after that. Then it's putting pieces of a show. Every day's a puzzle. Every day's a puzzle. You got to take these pieces and put them together in a way that will make the most watchable television program.
Well, John, you show up on my website fairly often because Art Donovan and I and you took some pictures together with Schlitz and hot dogs back in the day up in Harford County at the Port. And he sat and told his life story to you and I. And we have these beautiful photos of us. And we think of old athletes. And look, this isn't about old and modern and me being an old guy or a Latin guy or a white guy or this era or this sport or whatever. This is about just how you treat people.
Exactly.
And literally, this is about people. This isn't about rich people or poor people, because I like Joe Flacco was 5 minutes ago, and I was treated with respect by him and Dennis Pitta and different people. So this isn't about eras. This is about the tenor of what the Ravens want to be and what the Orioles want to be and how they want to treat the community and how these teams have been pedestaled for a long, long time and tend to employ people that are mirrors for ownership. And in this particular case, we have moved from Angelos yelling, "We don't want to be a branch town. We need to have local ownership. It's got to be local." And as if Edward Bennett Williams putting the team here wasn't local enough. And then Steve Bisciotti saying, "Well, I'm going to buy the team. I'm local. I'm from Severn River." Dude, Steve Bisciotti lives in Florida, votes in Florida, has 2 feet on a yacht in the Bahamas, and Peter Angelos is eating pudding and his kids in Nashville. We don't have a local ownership situation here anymore, in the way that when the Modells came in here, and you were here for the beginning of that, they needed to sell tickets. They needed to sell something. Even Angelos wanted to sell something at the time. Dude, this thing is so far gone now where it doesn't matter how anybody treats anybody. Bisciotti's making $200 million a year in profit.
Get the hell out of here. $200 million?
John, he bought the team. Let's do the math on this, brother. You ready? He bought the team for $575. Okay, in 2004 is when the transaction happened. It's worth $4 billion now. Billion.
Oh my God.
So doing numbers here, if he's making $200 million a year, that adds, you know, that it adds up quickly in 20 years. It
That's
went
crazy.
From being worth $600 million to soon it'll be worth $4.6 billion.
Well, that's how you get to that's how you get to a place where you treat other people like garbage, you know, because you're so rich. You've got go to hell money, and so do the players. And the players will—they all want to think they're Mick Jagger. Okay, they all think they're rock stars. And if you allow them to conduct themselves like that, that's what they're going to do. And that's where we are. They're all too good. They're all above it all, and that's why. And then the team placates that, and the team thinks that it is above it all. You know, so. Yeah, okay, you guys are too cool for school, and I can live without you. That's where I am.
Yeah, I'm much happier not being there and being mistreated. I mean, I want to make that clear because you asked me, and we haven't talked at all off the air. And quite frankly, I don't really want to talk to most people about this. I want to talk to somebody like you who's done the job as long as I've done the job to say, this isn't how – and that's what I wrote to Bisciotti. It's what I wrote to the public, which is this is just not how people deserve to be treated. And – I said to my wife in recent years, what am I doing in a hotel room in Cincinnati on a 12-degree night when they're going to shut the locker room down? If anybody does anything significant, they're not going to talk. Harbaugh is going to lie about injury reports. John Buren is our guest, longtime channel, the 13 WJZ. What do you want me to say to people that you're doing now? Like, I just, so I want to be clear about this.
Whatever the hell I want. Dear God, bro.
That's why I love you. That's why I love you. No, I was going to say this in regard to the media and treatment and where we are. If you're going to treat people poorly, don't come at all. And for me, over the last 5 or 6 years and the plague, has made this easier. There are players on this team that didn't know a life with an open locker room, and they've had Coach Saban telling everybody the media's rat poison from the beginning, that by the time they get here with agents, coaches, handlers, they already have a very, very healthy disdain for anything with a microphone. Used to be a time in Evansville when you had a minor league player after the game hit a home run, he wanted to talk to the people, you know. They can all talk to the people right here, right now on their social media.
Exactly.
That changed everything in 9 and 10, right?
Yeah, it did. And you see, that's how they get around, because you'd think if these guys are that big of jerks and if they treat people that poorly, surely no one would go to the games. Surely people would be disinclined to watch the games on TV. But like you say, they pull out one of these and they can do their Twitter and they can communicate. They can have their own website. They can do their own PR. You know, yeah, the cell phones changed everything. And I think that's a big piece of what's keeping people somewhat interested in what these knuckleheads are doing, is because they feel like they're in touch through Twitter and other social media.
Well, they want us to not focused on the personality of Albert Bell, but that's kind of part of it, like intertwined in all this. And I guess for you with golf, with tennis, the things that you're still watching or still engaged with, the personalities, what they're selling at this point, much more so than the sport in
Oh,
many, many
absolutely.
cases of the competition, right?
Because
I
you,
root
yeah.
for player X, I root against player X.
Right. It's all personality in those games. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, they say, well, we don't want you to go into this about this player. We want you to show it. But yet you want to push the player as a commodity. You know, you want people to feel like they've humanized the guy. You want people to feel a connection to the player, but don't ask about that. You know, they don't want real world. That's the name of that too. They want the world as they define it. And who wouldn't? Sure.
Yeah, you feel like you didn't take 1 minute longer in this game than you needed to take. I mean,
Oh,
it's
I
been
was
20
done.
years for you. I can't imagine the modern part of this, not to mention the industry, right? The television industry, local news, like local radio, website, like all of that. The industry itself in these last 2 decades is frayed in so many different directions that it's not a shocker that Ravens.com has become Hard Knocks, except 24 hours a day, and they control what snippets they put out on their website. That's literally, it's candid cameras what's going on there.
Right. That's where it is. And you know, you've always owned your own shop. You haven't had to work for anybody or in a newsroom where you have bosses and all that stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, I wouldn't last 5 minutes in a newsroom these days. I could not go on TV and say half the stuff I used to say. I would be a scourge in the newsroom because of some level of political incorrectness. I mean, the world has changed really dramatically when it comes to interpersonal relationships and what you can say and what you can't say on TV. You know, I don't think you can go out there and knock the home team anymore. I think the owner or the GM will pick up the phone and call the general manager and you'll be out. You know?
You talk, is that
Yeah.
like me?
Exhibit A. Exhibit A.
John Buren is here. He did it for a long time at a high level. He's out
Yeah.
now working on his tennis game in not even semi-retirement. So like no real estate, nothing. You're done.
No, stay here. Yep, I'm done.
Grandkids, what are we doing, man? Tell your fans, the people who don't have you in their cell phone, because you're hiding. I mean, you're like Batman in a cave somewhere, Buren. I mean, you
Nestor,
might come out at Preakness, maybe.
listen to me. Nobody knows who the hell I am. It was 20 years ago, man. I'm just a guy who your parents used to watch on TV sometimes. That's it. It's done. It was fun while it lasted, but it's game, set, and match for me as far as media goes.
You going to Preakness?
I don't know. I might. It just depends. I don't like crowds, and that's a bad place to be if you don't like crowds.
I would
Remember the
say.
hey, remember the year that they told you couldn't bring any beer into the infield? It was the year Rachel Alexandra won the Preakness. I'm sitting there watching it on TV. I'm going, damn, there's nobody down there.
I was the nobody that was there. I went and just to walk around and have that sort of out of body experience of where did all the people go?
Was a great year. That was a great year. I got in the car about 4 o'clock, went down there. It was great.
Well, I mean, less people means better parking for all of us. Hey, man, it's really nice to visit with you. I didn't want it to
You
turn into a,
too.
you know, it's not about bitching for me. I mean, I've had more time on my hands. I'm doing other things. I have like a whole business. We're doing a crab cake tour. Come get a crab cake with me one day. We'll sit around and talk about, you know, tennis games and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll do it. All right. I appreciate you having me on, Nestor. It's good to be remembered every now and then. So God bless you for that.
Every time you pop up with Artie Donovan and a can of Spam and hot dogs and Schlitz beer, I say to myself, I wonder how Buren's doing. So I'm glad you're doing well. It's really, really nice to see you, brother. And thank you for always treating me well when you were a big shot up on TV Hill and I was just a kid trying to read the scores and maybe get on television on the weekends or maybe carry the producer's pad for you at some point. You were always good to me, and I appreciate that, John.
We always got along well, Nestor. I always enjoyed your company.
Appreciate it. John Buren, my man, joining us from, this is my wrestling reference for you, Parts Unknown. And it's. And at some point, I'm going to find the old bowling alley videos of you down at Pinland and Dundalk and us raising money for Ed Block. John was always great to us at Channel 13. I can't believe it's been 20 years. Feels like 20 minutes. You can find me doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour beginning next week. We're going to be at Fadley's next month. We're going to be at Costas next month. There is a rumor that the great Hall of Famer, Gina Schock from the Go-Go's, is going to reunite with me for a longer form conversation about all things Penguins at East Point Mall, wastewater disposal in Dundalk, and how she beat the drums to death in Dundalk and joined a rock and roll band. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.